accession number 22083, rail 4.
We set off to get back to our own lines by taking a bearing on the North Star, which was something like our Southern Cross here. You know, we knew just about where we were, except that in front of our positions there was two big wooden crosses. One was on our left and one was on our right. And when we got within sighting distance, we could see the silhouette of this big cross on the skyline, and we took it to be the one that was in front of our position, but it was the one that was in front of the pole's position. And we were just about to walk through one of their minefields, and they bailed us up. And of course they knew who we were. As soon as they heard us talk, they knew that we were Australians.
What were the crosses?
Well, I was told that around the crosses was heavily mined, and if any tanks were to come and get within like close to those crosses, they had a wire in the leading position to, and they'd pull that, and the whole lot would go up, and then the idea was to blow the tanks up.
There were signposts, basically, to...
Signposts, yeah. We knew what they were, but whether the Germans knew what they were for, well, they probably did. And,
now, these are the patrols you were to do it in Tobruk as a fighting defence, I understand.
No, this was just a listening post. We used to go out for 24 hours... I'll get back to where we were about to. We were pulled up by the poles. They come out and guided us through their minefield, and then when we got back to our own position, which was R33, I think. I'm not too sure about that.
So you were on. This is on the red line, the front line.
Yep. Yeah, we were actually quartered in, I think it was a post R33.
Just in front of the Garden of Eden. What was the Garden of Eden like?
Well, I never saw it. I dare say it must have been a tree of some sort, because there wasn't much there. There was a fig tree over where... There's a fig tree there, and they had an RAP under that, and the fig tree grew over the top of it. Now, I never ever got to that either. Thank God.
Why thank God?
Well, if you went there, you were wounded or something like that, or sick. But I never had any trouble while I was in Tobruk. But getting back to this patrol, we got back through the Polish lines and then back to our own post. And we were only there about half an hour, and the old colonel said, you've got to go out again. So we had to pack up and find our way out again to the we used to call them the Wog Village.
And did it have a name, do you know?
No, I don't know. I don't know whether it had it. Only for our own use, I think they used to call it Bob or Bash. But that was just a reference for it. And, of course, we went out. Not knowing whether the Germans or the Italians had came in and taken it over, so we had to walk in and take things pretty quiet, but they hadn't.
Maybe we can talk more about the patrols and your time in Tobruk a little later, but we've gotten on to the patrol having read the QM Daily.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, by the time you reached your final port of call, what was your level of confidence on arrival?
What, in the Middle East? Oh, we're full of beans and bright ideas. I don't think anybody had any worries at that stage of the game. And then we I think Tewfik is on the Egyptian side of the canal, and we had to come down the canal. At that time there was no bridge over it, and so we crossed it by barge and then got onto a train and went up to a place called Maghazi. That was Maghazi, about, that's where the 24th Brigade training camp was, and that's about, would have been about 60 k's west of Tel Aviv. It would be west, I suppose. Yeah. At any rate, it was along the Mediterranean coast.
What was the feeling on arriving at your camp?
Oh, just another day in the day of the army, as far as I could.
What did it look like? What do you recall of the place?
Pretty flat and looked pretty arid, although there was some along the railway line there was little gardens, and they used to grow melons and cucumbers and that, and of course they'd stack them just not far from the railway line. And the first thing the troops did when they saw it, when the train stopped, they got out and helped themselves to these melons. And it turned out that the old Arab, there, he put in a claim then to the army to get paid for them, because he always asked twice as much of what they were worth. But they were good melons, rock melons and watermelons. And
were you equipped by this stage with proper weaponry?
Yeah, we had a rifle. I had a 303. We never had a Bren gun or a Tommy gun, as far as I can remember. It wasn't until we'd been there a week or two that we were introduced to the Tommy gun and the Bren gun.
Now, you've been with your brother, as I understand, on this trip the whole time.
Yep.
What was it like to have your brother with you?
We used to share things, if he had a pound, I had half of it, and vice versa, and we got on pretty good. But there was always the idea of transferring to the 2nd 16th, because all our there was almost a complete company of Goldfields blokes in the made up B Company of the 2nd 16th, and we were going to go and transfer to them.
You were never able to do that, were you?
Well, it could have. When we came out of Tobruk, I said to Barney, are you going to get transferred to the 2nd 16th? And he said yes. And I said, well, you go to the 2nd 16th and I'll stay with the 2nd 43rd. Because I'd heard some stories of brothers, you know, getting knocked about in Tobruk, and one particular occasion was two brothers were out on a raid, and one was wounded and taken prisoner, and at that stage things were pretty amicable between the Germans and the Australians. I'm not sure whether it occurred on the occasion where they had an unofficial truce, and it was the first one that was ever a first unofficial truce that was ever held between Australians and Germans, and it was when the 2nd 43rd tried to retake one of the positions in the salient, and they made their objective all right, but when they went to send the signal up to that they'd got to their objective, the officer was supposed to fire a very light, and then those that were waiting would have come up, but I think his very pistol got shot off in the attack, and of course the reinforcements never turned up, and the Germans just took over again, and so Padre Gard, he was our padre, he went out and arranged a truce, and they picked up their dead and wounded, and we picked up our dead and wounded, and this, I'm pretty sure it was on that occasion when these two brothers, one was wounded and the other one wasn't, and they gave him the option of staying with his brother or going back, and he stayed with his brother. So I thought, well, that's no good as far as I'm concerned. So
they often tried to avoid brothers being in the same...
Well, not really, because in our 8 platoon, not 8 platoon, A company, there was either 3 or 4 Smith brothers. There was 2 Matthews, 2 Joneses, 2 Parslows, 2 Mitchells, 2 Bells. They were all brothers, and almost without exception, by the time they got back to Australia, one had gone off, you know.
I understood that one of the reasons, I assume, from things that I've heard, is that they separate the brothers because if one went, it would affect the morale of the other, and then ultimately...
Well, that's what I thought, at any rate. But they never made any attempt to split the brothers up.
By the time you were to arrive at, we were mentioning Tripoli at this particular camp, what was the situation that you knew of in the Middle East and the Western Desert in regards to places like Tobruk? What were you being told about at that point?
Well, we were up in Syria digging defences and that, because they thought at some stage they might try to come down through Turkey and that, and Tobruk was supposed to be secure, but then I think it was about June, sometime in June, the word came through that Tobruk had fallen,
I was thinking before you actually went to Tobruk, because this would have happened after you came back.
Yeah.
What had you heard about the siege of Tobruk before you actually ended up going there?
Only what was in the papers and that, and what came over the radio, and
there had been mention of the Benghazi handicap and everyone retreating into Tobruk.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, that was the start of the siege. Was the Benghazi handicap was when some of the 9th Division got up as far as Benghazi, but then that's when the Germans came in, and then the race was on to get back, and they got back into
Tobruk.
Well, that happened before we ever left Australia, you see, because that was in April, and we didn't leave Australia until July. It was April, May, June, July, three.
So what were you hearing in regard to the conditions in Tobruk before you were to go there and how people were coping there?
Well, we heard things were pretty tough. The rations were crooked and the water was scarce and all that sort of business. But when the time came, I think there was about 150 of us went up, and there was probably the same amount left behind, you know, like at Benghazi. We knew we weren't going to any picnic.
Had you had an opportunity to speak to anyone who'd been in action at Benghazi?
Oh, yes, yeah, there was. But most of them, they weren't in the really rough part of the beginning of the siege, when the Germans tried to break into Tobruk in the first place. Our troops were on the, like our battalion was on the other flank, so they didn't see too much of that. The only time that they had any real trouble was when they attacked. I think it was R7 to try and straighten out the line. Like the Germans held a point there, what they call the salient, and they tried to straighten the line out by retaking that position again. I think generally the 24th Brigade, they were fairly lucky in the fact that they were on the opposite flank to where all the main action was. Of course, I wasn't there, but at that time. But
what are some of the other operations in the war? The evacuation from Crete. Did you know about that at all?
Yeah. We heard that.
What were your feelings regarding that?
Well, we knew things were getting pretty. The situation was getting pretty bad. When was the evacuation of Crete?
It was in June of 41, before you'd gotten to.
Before we ever got there, that's right, there.
What then were some of the feelings that you may have had regarding the closeness of your first taste of action?
Oh, well, I suppose you could call it action. I went out on a couple of fighting patrols in.
Before you went to Tobruk, before you were to go to Tobruk, what was your thought of, it's not going to be long before I'm sent off somewhere?
As far as I can recall, I never thought much about it, you know.
What then was the time that you realised you were heading off to Tobruk? Who told you, and what did they tell you?
Well, it was in camp in Mugazi, and we were told that there was a certain number would be going up, and if our number came out, well, we'd be going up. So other fellows that went away with us, I don't know whether they were glad or sad that they weren't picked to go up. But
to what extent had your training extended at this camp?
Well, it was mainly route marches, like through the sand dunes and that along the beach. They got us into pretty good condition. And we used to do exercises, like military exercises, where they're supposed to be similar to what you'd strike in real action, but nothing was quite the same as being in the real thing.
What did that entail?
Hmm?
What did those...
Well, they'd have one, say... One company would be the enemy, and the other one would be the attacking troops, and you used to have to form up in your sections. Before they went into action, they'd the engineers or somebody or I'm not sure which ones they were now. They used to go out and put a tape down in the dark. And then when you were to go into action, they'd line you up on this tape, and of course the barrage had come over. Palestine, we never had any barrages because they just couldn't go shelling everywhere, but they, in theory, the barrage would go over, and then you'd follow the barrage in, and they had judges that they used to, depending on what you did, they would allot so many points to the attackers and so many points to the defenders and all that sort of business. How they worked it out, I don't know, but...
What extent at this point did you really think things were serious? It all sounds a bit like a big game to me.
Well, I don't think anybody actually knew what they were going to do until the real thing.
How would you know that the barrage had gone over in this instance, for instance?
In training, you mean? They'd blow a whistle or something like that, and then you're up and over. It wasn't realistic, but it give you the idea of keeping so far away from your next door mate and that, and he'd be so much further on your left, and you were to keep a reasonably straight line if possible, and all that sort of business.
What was the reason for making sure you were a certain distance away?
Well, you're a smaller target. And if you went in clumps and you run into a machine gun nest, well, you've all gone instead of just one.
What sort of respect did you have in your commanding officers or the people in charge of your section?
The majority of them were held in pretty high esteem. There might have been one or two that didn't perform too good, but generally they were just like everybody else. So some of them cracked up.
In what way?
Well, the nerves got them, you know, like I suppose if they see a bloke knocked over alongside them, it might rattle them, which it probably would do.
I assume that, that most of your immediate officers had not seen battle.
Most of them, no, they were the same as we were. They left Australia with us and they went into action with us. There were a few that had been in Tobruk, that, you know, like that. Doing patrols, fighting patrols and recce patrols, but other than that, there was nothing like it was at Alamein, as far as I was concerned, anyway.
We'll talk about that later. What was your thought of some of the other people in command at that time?
Well, I think everybody had a very high regard for Moorshead, but I think General Blamey was a different kettle of fish. We never ever had anything to do with him, but up to that stage, anyway, we never thought for him or against him. But Moorshead, he had the respect of all.
What are some of the British commanders? Did you know?
No, we never had anything to do with him. I'm not sure who was in. Was it Auchinleck in charge early in Alamein? Yeah, well, I think he got the rough end of the stick because. It didn't matter who was in charge, I think, at that stage of the game, but they were on the run. And
did you concern yourself with the commanders at home, the government at all?
No, we never, never questioned any of their movements or any of their decisions, not that I can remember.
At the time, 28th in August, Menzies was resigning and McFadden was coming in, and it wasn't long before Curtin would come. Did those sorts of actions at home play any part in your mind?
Not mine, at any rate.
Did you feel prepared? Did you feel fairly confident with the training that you received before you were to head off to Tobruk that you were going to handle things okay?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if I remember right, one of the officers of the 43rd said we were the best trained recruits they'd reinforcements that they'd had. Because we did have 6 months, pretty rigorous training in Northam, and
but you hadn't had weapons to train with.
No. Well, we did have Vickers machine guns that we had to dismantle and assemble and all that sort of thing, but. We had very little, I think we went on the rifle range once before we went. I remember one of my mates, he wasn't too crash shot at shooting, and so we decided But I'd take his place. I went through and I got my marks, and I went through in his name and shot for him, because at that stage they said, well, if you don't pass, you don't go away, and which was a lot of bull dust, I think.